Welcome back to the Bitter Jurors podcast. We are a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast for not much longer. I am one of your hosts, Derek Grinding, as always, and I'm joined by someone who I hope would at least hesitate a second before firing a giant pink beam at me from across a bay. It's Sam Stanish.
Ooh, I wish I could be in this podcast, but my farts are too loud. Oh my God.
It's always jarring to remember this was made for children.
I was getting flashbacks to the grape guy on My Hero Academia, who's sort of just like every episode they cut to him and he just says something perverted, basically. Don't know if you ever watched that.
Speaking of which, we're not
little grape guy.
We are joined by a returnee. Sean McGowan is here.
Be back on Bitter Jurors.
Yes. How long is it? We had you on for Korra, right? Was that,
I think,
it?
Book two sometime. Book two.
Yeah, the spirit world one, I believe. We're getting right. The origin, like the first avatar, and then yeah, it was great. And this was a great episode too. I got two good ones.
Yes, sort of a past, a look to the past and look to the future. The future being mech suits, apparently.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it. The algorithm on TikTok has figured out that I like Avatar and Legend of Korra, and so I frequently get given videos about those things. And I didn't realize that people had so many complaints about the mech suits being a part of this show. I didn't realize that that was a critique leveled at this show. I don't think that it's really that big of a deal.
It's been in it since book one. I'm confused.
It's like, it doesn't come out of nowhere. They've got like the industry and the technology, and you know, is it just like, oh, it doesn't feel like in the spirit of the show? Like, I don't understand the criticism.
Yeah. Me either. They had tanks 100 years ago. I think that having hummingbird flying mech suits and gigantic avatar, I mean, Power Ranger Zords is fine.
Yeah, it's cool. So, like, why shouldn't it exist? I don't know. Plus, I feel like Korra feels very like Final Fantasy VI. Like we're in a sort of amalgamation of a lot of different eras. I think that's fine.
The Avatar has returned, cool. And we're advancing technologically.
Exactly. Sean, what are your thoughts on Book 4 at large?
I really like Kuvira. Just the concept at all. I love in Legend of Korra how they, or really in the entire franchise, any of those like jumps between like, okay, we can bend the four elements. What does that mean? And I know it's like blood bending for water bending. For me, metal bending, I think, is like such a great, I don't know. It's just a great evolution of, I think, of like a really good idea. And I really liked Kuvira. I think it wasn't this episode. I can't remember which one it is in book four, or if this guy's gotten to it, but there's this fantastic fight scene on a train with Kuvira. Yes. I can't remember what episode that was, but it's like, it's one of my favorite scenes in the entire series, honestly. Both that one, I will like literally like sometimes be like, okay, like I will watch just that fight scene on YouTube. It's really good.
Yeah, we talked about that last week with the Beifongs thrown down with Kuvira.
That's part of it, why I think Kuvira is such a great villainess, just because I think metal bending's cool. Her character, I get it. I don't think it's maybe as like rich as some of the other villains in across the other books, but I still like book four a lot.
But like, I feel like there's room for it to be like very in depth. Like, I feel like I just don't understand why they didn't bring up this Republic City thing until this episode, where they're like, this was our land and you took it from us. Like, that is such a captivating motivation for a villain. Or like, and now I'm kind of like, maybe she is right. Like, that was a bad thing that they did, it seems. We don't get a lot of information about it, and I think it's covered in one of the comic books, but like, I don't know. I think that it's a very interesting thing to talk about, and they kind of brush past it a little bit and don't really go too in depth on it.
Yeah, I feel
I
like...
ask you guys that, like, if there was more content, because I was just, I hadn't watched, I just kind of, like, jumped in, and, like, did there, like, a, because that is, the land occupation thing's very...
Yeah, like, this is the first time they've mentioned it.
Yeah. Okay,
that's wild.
I think the idea is that it's just, like, Kuvira is sort of using that as a guise for just, like, her power hungriness, but that in itself is, like, weird to imply that, like, oh, the only reason someone would, like, have this opinion is to disguise that they are, like, secretly evil. Like, that's not a good thing to say about, like, a very legitimate, still currently, like, being had conversation. Like, I feel like for whatever reason that the whole, like Palestine, like, allegory did not, like, hit for me in the same way when I was watching it fucking 10 years ago. And you're like, oh, wait, that's, like, yeah, that is fucked up. And it's, like, I don't think they intended for it to be, like, a one-to-one parallel, but that's how it feels when you think about it for more than 5 seconds.
Yeah, it feels like it's... I think that they'd have to have considered this interpretation while writing this, right? Like,
I hope not. I hope they didn't, because then that exactly. would make me feel better.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not like sure how you would miss that, but yeah, they definitely don't give that the sort of, like, breathing room it might sort of need, or the kind of, like, okay, if we're going to be making this allegory, we should give it some...
some consideration.
Yes, exactly. Maybe we talk about this a little bit.
I know, it's tough, and it's like, I wish, I don't know, I almost wish they had just not even brought it up, because it's like, bringing it up just introduces it to us as an audience. And it feels like you said, Sam, this wasn't even a motivating factor for Kuvira until this episode. So it just feels off.
Meanwhile, if this had come in like episode one of this season, I don't, it would just add so many layers, it feels like, to the conflict and conversations they had. But instead, it's just like everyone, they were all separated and there was like chaos or whatever, and she like took power, which is interesting too. But this is like a whole other thing, it feels like.
Yeah, this almost feels like what Amon should have been. This idea of like a faction within Republic City being like, hey, like the fact that this place exists and not under like the rule of the people who like actually lived here, like, is weird. Like, let's solve that problem. I don't know. I feel like this easily could have been like a book one redux, but they decided not to, I guess.
Especially because, yeah, I mean, like, Aang and Zuko supposedly made this happen, when it's like, where was the Earth King in this decision? Who knows?
He was out traveling, right? Yeah, they did. I feel like they didn't even really address, like, what was the, how long did it take for the queen to come in, because the king like just left, if I remember correctly.
The king left at the end of book two and like went, like was in disguise, but then right. Yeah, I guess I don't remember. I don't think that they disclose what happened with the king at the end of the first show. Regardless, very interesting concept, poor execution, which is my review of Legend of Korra.
Yeah, it's very Project Runway when someone sends like a clown dress down the runway and you're like, oh, okay, I guess I kind of get what you're going for here, but it's an assault on the eyes.
But this episode was pretty good. Like,
yeah.
as always, we're like, this was bad, but actually it was good. But I thought it was interesting and well set up, and I liked pretty much all of the scenes in it. And like, I loved at the beginning, just like the first thing we see is Kuvira making this big speech, and she's like, we're taking it back. Go us. And then her and Pitar are talking, and Pitar is like, I love you. And Kuvir is like, I could never have done this without you.
It's pretty fantastic. Like, they did a good job with her. Like, her character makes sense to me. Like, everything she does and says tracks. When she fires the beam at like the building, you're like, yeah, of course. I don't think she, the only time she said I love you was when she was about to like vaporize him.
Yeah, she said it as like to fake them out, to think that she was like not tracking down their location to kill them all.
Classic. We love that.
The design of the mech, I'm like, okay, it's whatever. It's just like kind of like a big robot, like probably could have been cooler. But I do love the sound that the pink beam makes, the like massive like beat drop EDM bass thing. Right. I did really enjoy that touch.
Yeah, the sound design is really good with the mech. It's like very, it's like scary. It's like, for whatever reason, like you said, Sean, like the first time I watched, I was like, this mech doesn't really read for me. But I think on this watch, maybe it is the fact that it's like CG in comparison. There's something just very unsettling about it. The fact that it's like kind of humanoid, but then its head is like just like a flat rectangle is like kind of, especially when you imagine just like you're standing there and you just see this thing just like walk up, is like, that is pretty scary. So I would say it's actually a very effective design.
Like the shots of her piloting it with bending, I think is really cool.
Very cool. Reminds, very G Gundam.
Yes. Very.
yeah, it's cooler, a shame.
Like better Pacific Rim. Like, yes. Like the idea of like that, okay.
Pacific Rim needs two people to pilot this thing. Power Rangers got to have at least five. Kuviri does it by herself.
Very efficient mech.
Yes, but she also has her like radio dude there, just like sitting there while she's like doing all these like moves.
I'd love, you know, a Pacific Rim alternate universe, or maybe like if book five happened, maybe spirits would start coming out of the ocean and they'd have to get in these gigantic mechs every episode. Could be fun.
So
another scene I really love that I feel like I you like never see in these kinds of like stories is like they kidnap Batar, and then they show the like awkward fallout, like almost like a logistical thing where they're agreeing to the terms of surrender. I just love that scene. I feel like it's such a weird, like the fact that they chose to put it in there, like, okay, well, since he's kidnapped, like obviously his underlings aren't gonna know what happened to him, and there's this like little awkward comedy with it. Which I really enjoyed. I think it was maybe my favorite scene in this episode.
It was very good.
And then the president and Kuvira get on the phone, and the president's like, okay, like, what's the deal? Why did you do this?
It almost turns into like comedy of errors, but it's like it's a very tense war in terms of surrender like setting.
Yeah, it felt almost like this is like what the promise of Avatar, like if you're like, okay, what's the next more like grown-up version of Avatar, this feels kind of like that. Like I feel like Avatar addressed a lot of like ideas about war and like the ethics of like, I mean, like the Jet episode, the ethics of like harming civilians, and then I feel like Korra kind of got away with it from that a little. It became more like action-y. So this feels like more of like, okay, so now we're like in a more adult world where we have to address the idea of like bully kidnapping someone and like threatening to torture them. Like, let's just like think about that for a second. Which I think it was good that they got up to that edge, and then Korra was just like, no, I'm like obviously not going to like rip your fingernails out or something.
Yeah, and then... Well, they go right up to the line with it. It's so confusing to me because, like, in this scene, they're finding all these different ways to torture Batar, but they're not going to physically harm him, even though he's, like, the second in command of this, like, evil empire. But then also, they're threatening him, and they're like, well, if you don't tell us what's going on, you'll never see Kuvira again. And I'm like, oh my god, Korra's threatening to kill Kuvira. And then she's like, that's right. If you don't tell us, everywhere I run away from her, I'm going to take you with me, and you'll never see her again.
It's like such a hassle for her. That is the most inconvenient. Like, I will also ruin my own life by dragging you around with me as I spend my years hiding from this dictator.
Torturing yourself at that point. You got to hang out with this guy.
I mean, they kind of.
Mm-hmm. Again,
but she just like is like straight up saying, "I'm going to turn you into a prisoner of war for the rest of your life." Like that's just like the thing. I don't know. I feel like this whole episode, they really like intentionally or not, just like embroil themselves in like a lot of conversations that I don't think they like actually wanted to have. Like, that's fucked up. That's fucked up that you're like not like you're, I'm pretty sure it's a war crime to just like snatch someone up, like of like an enemy, like general. You're just like taking them away.
I'm not too read up on war crimes, but I do know that false surrenders are definitely a war crime. But I guess the president surrendered and then Team Avatar acted as their own group, which I guess there's a blurred line there because, you know, the Avatar is removed from all nations, but it's kind of like she definitely was on the Republic City side and the president was leading them. So it's kind of like, girl, I don't know if this is...
That's what I was going to ask you guys, because I was trying, exactly, because I was trying to be like, okay, so like, what is the relationship that like, is the president about to be furious at Team Avatar for like going, you know, off book or like taking matters in their own hands? And I feel like from what I remember, it's like kind of what you were saying. It's like, yes, the Avatar's jurisdiction is always like a little cloudy, I guess. I feel like it's just maybe it's just like, oh, when it's just kind of whatever the episode calls for. It's like, you know, it's like, okay, it's, remember, she's impartial or whatever and not part of any nation. When it's convenient and when it's not convenient, it goes, and she's just on the side of the good guys and she can't do this because of the president, you know, something like that. So, yeah, I don't know. I was trying to remember that because that felt to me like another weird, like, oh, it's a very interesting nod of like, is this a betrayal, basically? Is this a, like...
Yeah, I would love maybe in a future series them addressing like as like a political sort of figure, where does the Avatar need to stand, and like when she's essentially acting as her own sort of like sovereign nation that's just her basically and her best friends. it's like, okay, so what are they, who are they aligned with, like what's like what constitutes, I don't know, it's such a bizarre thing to think about in the realm of like world politics. And I this doesn't feel like something they thought about at all, and then like they just started like bringing it up weirdly. I don't know. It's a weird thing to think about.
Fake surrendering is a tried and true strategy in the Star Wars universe, and I believe that there's a lot of like creative overlap between the like Clone Wars show and this show, right? I think. Anyway, it's all baked into the children's media. war crimes are beloved by heroic figures.
We love it.
Okay, but I mean, I'm confused by the president's surrender too. Like, if I was Korra, I'd be like, why did you do this? Because nothing really changed. Like, they knew about the weapon and all that changed was that now they have this big mech, but it's kind of like the army is here, like everyone's ready to go. And I will say that when the robot was showing off its laser and firing it at the boats, it didn't look that strong. And
yeah, so it took out one boat with each shot, so it's like, right. Oh.
And it's just kind of like, we're all here ready to do this. This is what we've all been building up to, and you're going to surrender now that everybody's been evacuated and the army is like ready to go.
Yeah,
I also love that they have the which I always get a kick out of it, just all like children's media of like the one shot of like making sure that everyone, just to let you know, everyone on the boat is fine. They've got that like 2 second shot of the airbenders like rescuing the people on the boat, just to like ensure like, and don't worry, like no innocent civilians died during this, which I feel like is a very Star Wars type thing too.
Like, show them ejecting with the parachutes right before they explode. Yeah,
exactly.
It's like, why? I don't know. They even reference like casualties and stuff. It's like, I don't know. It's definitely like a studio, like Nickelodeon thing. It's like, you can't show people burning to death.
Something that I found very interesting in this episode was like, they know the army's coming, whatever. And then Tenzin's meeting with his family, and he's like, okay, why aren't you like getting on the boats to leave? And Pema and his kids are like, we're staying. And there wasn't even a moment where Tenzin was like, no, you have to go, it's going to be dangerous. He was like, thanks. Which I mean, it's very, very different than what I expected. I don't dislike it, but it was just very, I've never seen anything like that before.
Oh my god. Yeah. This episode just embroiled in a lot of political hoo-ha, but I think we're really ignoring the real hero, which is of course Prince Wu, evacuating the city. I feel like it's funny that we talk
where it's like, it was weirdly running that like line of like, oh, this is funny, but it's also very like effective. It kind of wanted it both ways. It wanted to be like, this is silly, but it's actually very, it's like working. This is serious too.
He's really inspiring people. Yeah, I don't understand why they keep going to this well of like, oh, he would be a really good king. I thought like we established like kings were like not what we wanted. I don't know. The show, once again, it seems very confused about what message it wants to impart in regards to royalty.
Yeah, because I mean, at this point, well, I guess we don't know how the tribe leaders of the water tribes are selected as an election. I don't know.
Well, they're chiefs.
Yes.
So I think so, right?
Maybe. And so the king and Kuvira are monarchs, and then the Fire Nation is also led by monarchy, and then the Air Temple really only has Tenzin, who's kind of a monarch.
Yeah.
That's kind of the only thing they know, other than the president.
So there's no like parliament or like, do we see like that sort of like any sort of like a Congress type thing, or is it always just like, oh, it's a council or one guy?
In the first season, Republic City was led by a council of 5 people, though I don't know that we know how they were selected either.
Interesting.
Yeah, again, it's like, what were Aang and Zuko thinking? And Zuko was alive for this.
Zuko was alive, is still alive. Zuko is currently living.
And like, they were just okay with this. They didn't think like, oh, like they should be elected officials. Like, I feel like that would be a smarter decision than we're going to elect one president to represent everyone, and not just like we're going to have these sort of groups of people that make up Republic City have their own representatives. It's weird.
Also, like, I feel like it, yeah, I mean, between season 1 and 2, they completely overhauled their system of government from like this chancellor vibe to this like singular executive power, and it's like, I think there's an interest, there would have been an interesting season of that to be made.
Like, if I remember correctly, it's just a change in title, right? Like, it's basically like, yeah, it was a chancellor and now it's still a single executive, but it's called a president, so it's okay now. Like, it's much better.
Yeah, he's not evil, he's also just like a little stern, so it's better, I guess.
I don't think that there was a chancellor guy. It was just like there was a, or I misused the word. It's just like there was like this council, and then those people got removed, and now they, I guess they supposedly they elected this president. I didn't see it happen.
Yeah,
he just seems.
I mean, it's like, I guess there's like this implied like time between books 1 and 2 where they established an entire voting system within Republic City and got it done in like a month.
Maybe they were already voting for these elected officials. Maybe they were voting for these counselors, but
then that means it's like, why is there a president? It's like, then they should have just like elected, maybe they still have the council to represent like the different like ethnic groups of Republic City, but then they have one guy who represents like the native people of Republic City. I don't fucking know. Makes no sense.
I think I think another issue is that everyone on the council was a bender, and then the president's a non-bender, but like they don't really, that plot doesn't matter anymore.
It doesn't. Oopsie daisy. The end. Yeah, what else even happens in this episode? I mean, Batar almost gets blown up by his woman. The hummingbirds got destroyed Julie and Varric.
Oh yeah, Julie and Varric. We didn't mention them. Julie's back. And she apologized and he forgave her, but then started treating her like an assistant again.
They never learn.
Character too. I was like hoping we'd get some more. I don't know. I always enjoy his scenes.
Yeah, Varric is a star. I feel like, again, I talked about this with Boleyn, but why is Julie wearing the ugliest outfit now that she's not part of the evil group anymore? I don't get it. They're all like doing such a fashion downgrade when they leave fascism. I don't get it.
I don't know.
I do love her, the design of her glasses. She has got the like just floating, like they're just floating, yes, 2 inches under her eyes. I don't know. I love that style.
Gravity defying glasses. I know. She has a great design. Her hair is cute with it's like down, but I'm just like, why do you want to wear a potato sack?
I think it's a similar issue to what happened in the later seasons of Game of Thrones, where everybody just started dressing in like all black because it's a dark and serious show. And I feel like that happened with all these characters too, where they're all just like now wearing these very, very dark greens or almost browns of red. And it's just like, let's color it up. We're a cartoon. Let's get some interesting outfits on.
Yeah. It's like, just because like there's the threat of a dictator doesn't mean you have to look like drab and boring. If anything, you should be like celebrating like individuality or whatever with your fashion choices.
With your fascist choices?
Yeah.
that's the only choice. Fashion. That's the only choice they have these days, it seems.
Hello. Yeah.
How do you guys feel about the flying squirrel Airbender outfits? I'm never crazy about these things. I think they remind me too much of like the base jumping, like weird. I don't know.
They look okay on the kids. They look good on the kids. They just simply do not work on the adult. Like Tenzin and Boomy look bizarre in them.
Yeah,
they're essentially onesies. I assume that's the reason why the adults look insane with it. But
exactly. I mean, it's like, just dress your age. That's my always my advice. Just dress your age. Tenzin, a flowing robe is perfect.
But then he wouldn't be able to fly around, I guess.
He can do that anyway. Like
he can use his
right. Like staff. You can airbend even if you're wearing jeans. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Have jeans been invented yet? No one's really wearing jeans.
That's,
I will say,
for the third Avatar. That's book three. Book three. Denim. Or after three.
You can get denim bending at Leap from Levi Strauss.
Ooh, yes. Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. I mean, we're clearly getting into like Evangelion territory here with the mechs and stuff. So I feel like if the next leap in time is to like a sort of 90s moment, I would love to see some like high rise, acid washed, some overalls. Like, it's there. The story is there.
Ginkgos for the airbenders.
I feel like
that feels very conducive to flowing.
I agree. We need some, maybe just like bump up a decade, get to the early 2000s, to the oddies, and have some like awful, like ICP, 311, like sort of just like awful fashion choices in a very interesting way, not these brown sacks.
We'll be doing Live Strong bands for the next Team Avatar.
Silly bands.
That'd be cute.
They'd be like in the shapes of like airbys, all their like silly little creatures instead.
Or like Aang.
Some like Aang shaped with like the arrow. Yeah, I mean, that would be the ultimate shade if they're like still like obsessed with Aang and like not Korra. That would be fucked up.
That's what I think that would be what the creators would do. You know, it seems like, you know, they know the Aang's the more popular one.
That's awful. I hate that.
Well,
that's life.
Life's not fair. Okay. Another criticism I have is, I mean, Korra's probably just planning to like hope they have time to regroup or whatever. But like in her conversation with Kuvira, she's like, just leave Republic City alone. You guys can have the rest of the Earth Empire, and we like just stop there. It's like she's not gonna stop there. She's like over the universe. But Korra's like willing to like just like let her have that. Obviously, she instantly goes around the surrender and does her own thing anyway. But it was just funny to be like, just stop,
knock it off.
That entire like interrogation scene is bizarre because she starts off like threatening to like physically hurt him, but she can't. And then they have like his mother come in and do this like emotional ploy. And then she has that line. She's like, wait, it's almost like seems like it's like a realization. It's like, wait, like we're going about this all wrong. And I thought that was because she's seen like his mother do this, like, you know, make this plea to him and like trying to like start to emotion. And she's like, I'll just threaten like the one he loves the most. Like it seems like she's about to have this entire revelation about like, I don't know, some sort of good or positive change, but instead just takes a hard right into like, okay, I'll psychologically torture you, I guess. It's like, oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah, guys, we're doing some, this is fucked up. We need to do something even worse.
Would exactly, it be bad exactly. for them to torture him? Like, would that be wrong?
I mean, if it's like, I don't know. Like, I just feel like even capturing him at all seems like a silly decision. Like, I feel like you would want to, I don't know, think of better solutions to like how the fuck, like, can't we just like go up and like topple the mech? Like, I feel like that should be what you're thinking about.
It does not seem like it has a very effective center of gravity.
Star Wars, we could absolutely do the like yes. the old leg wrap up. Feels like a classic one.
Yes, exactly. Or, I mean, to bring back Avatar, like, what's wrong with a little glue bending? If you just like glue up its parts, it's probably not going to work very well.
It just feels like a well placed water whip would be removing the laser from the.
That arm. Too. Just like take a slice out of it and you're good.
Not to go back to the I did have a thought when they capture him, like they really like make you like for a kid show, like really make you sit and like how brutal like kidnapping, like they fully like show like putting the bag over him, throwing him over the shoulder, tossing him up through the thing. Like it's very much like what they're doing is like it's like the brutal practicalities of like kidnapping a man, and it's like, oh Jesus. Yeah. Like
yeah, it's like funny because you think about like, oh, like they've probably like I'm sure SpongeBob has tossed Mr. Krabs into a sack before. It's like, but then it's like this cartoon is a lot more like, oh, these are like human bodies being like tossed around.
I feel it's like violent. It's a violent thing, but yeah.
Scary heroin.
It's yeah. even weirder that they have that, like they have those qualms, like they show this like really intensive like kidnapping scene and then up to the torture point they're like, and now we're sort of waffling on like and trying to grapple with our decisions here when they've already done something like really brutal.
Yeah, they just have like weird, I don't know, these people have like buyer's remorse all the damn time. They like get all the way up to the edge and they're like, oh wait, this is like not okay anymore. Or I guess kidnapper's remorse is a better word for it. Like,
It just feels like this would have been the point where Sue or like Mako or someone would be like, if you can't torture him, I will.
Yeah. I mean, that's like
down that road.
Where's Asami in all this? I feel like she would be a lot more willing to like do the dirty work.
Yeah. And it feels like Korra earlier in the show would have been very pro torture.
Growth. That's growth.
That is growth. I guess she's now been tortured and maybe she has a different perspective on it.
What's good for the goose?
No, I'm sure.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander, I say. Like, the fair play, blah, 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 all that stuff.
But if it's torture one guy or the entire world is taken over by a woman using. Perversely using and abusing spiritual energy, it's kind of like, let's torture him.
We could throw a few punches and it would be fine, you know.
Is that utilitarianist ethics I don't know, but that's where I'm standing. That's my firm stance.
We have Sam's answer to the trolley problem, essentially.
Yeah.
You've locked it in.
Like, yeah, you would kill the fewer ones, right?
That seems like the answer to me. Am I wrong?
No, I don't know. Now we're wading into ideologically or ethically weird boundaries, just like Cora. That does feel like the right answer. Maybe that's it. Maybe we just cracked it. You know, we've solved it. It's killed fewer people, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
So many people have already died. And they're not even threatening to kill this guy. They're just hurting him a lot.
Irreparably damaging him to get information out of him. Yeah, it's just like, again, I feel like these people are super powered individuals. It's like, we can come up with something else.
Like Hazy and Kuvera's relationship and like the episodes leading up to this. Like, I probably should have watched like two or three before just to like understand it. Cause it was like clearly like in the beginning they set it up and it's like, oh, okay. Like you said, Sam, like he's like, I love you. And she's like, thanks for all your help. And it's like very clear, like, oh, okay. So this is how this is going to go. But I was curious if like that feels like more of like a weird turn or if that's something that's been like, oh, since this relationship started, it's been very transactional for her.
I feel like they laid the groundwork for that.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, yeah, this would have been great to like, what if they had been like, I would have loved a scene in book three because obviously we got Kuvira like popping up in book three that one time. It's like, if they were like, had like flirting this whole time, would have loved to have a little scene of Batar Jr. like talking to her like, oh, I know you work for my mom or whatever, but like, I love you. And she's like, okay. Like, that would have been a great sort of introduction to this whole relationship, but I don't know. I don't think it's poorly done. It's just, like, not done to the extent that it probably should be.
No, this felt in line with what I felt about the characters. Like, it never felt like she, like, loved him or anything.
Right. So, yeah. Any other thoughts on a really fun episode of war crimes and torture?
I felt like there was some weird like back and forth in this episode where we start the episode and they're like, the evacuation is going poorly. And then it's like for like a one-off joke and then it gets fixed really quickly. And then, but then also later in the episode, Cora's like, me and us three need to go check out what's happening. Or no, she's like, we've got to kidnap Batar. And Tenzin's like, And then she's like, I know you probably disagree with that. And then he's like, actually, I'm in. And then she's like, okay, this is the plan. And it's just like, what was the point of that?
And with that end of scene where it's he's a weird Tenzin episode. Because you're right, there are these moments where it seems like there's about to be conflict. Like with his family being like, we're not evacuating, we're staying. And then Cora being like, oh no, we're going to do this plan. And it seems like he seems perfectly set up to be like, no, you can't do that. But every time it's just like, great, perfect. Like, sounds good.
Yeah. It does feel like Tenzin or Cora has been like a very bad influence on Tenzin over the years. That seems to be the vibe, you know?
Yeah, it just, the start of the show is all about Cora and Tenzin, and it's fallen apart a little bit, but I would have loved some more ethical conversations between them, especially here and now, on the precipice of war.
Yeah, I feel like we're kind of in it. If shit's getting blown up, then I think the war is on.
They surrendered. So.
Oh, yeah.
The war is canceled.
War is over. John Lennon got his way. Right? Isn't that his Christmas song?
Couldn't know. John, any final thoughts?
No, I don't think so. I enjoyed the episode. Always great to revisit Cora. And I'm glad we got the mech suit one. I was very happy. I was like, oh, this is a fun one to do.
Thank you for joining us, as always. I mean, whatever we venture into next, Hopefully it's something you like so you can talk to us about it.
Hopefully it's something I like also.
Fingers crossed.
All right, y'all.
Sean, where can our beautiful listeners find you?
Your beautiful listeners can find me, I guess, on just Instagram now that the website formerly known as Twitter is gone, essentially, as we know it. So you can find me on Instagram at Prom for Adults. Also, I have a website where all my writing is, and it's SeanMcGowanRice.com, and you can message me there and read all that fun stuff.
Amazing.
Beautiful.
Sam, what about you?
Me, I'm at Sam Stanish on Instagram, and us, we're Bitterdurs Pod on Instagram and Twitter, but at Bitterdurs Pod. And then I also do Buffy Boyfriends, Buffy the Vampire Slayer podcast with my boyfriend.
Yes. You can follow me at RangerX on Twitter, X, whatever the fuck it's called now. You can follow, us, Bitterdurs Pod. Follow Shadow Play Gaze for me and Christine. Only a few more weeks until Survivor 45 is here. We'll have Christine back as our third co-host, and we'll talk through the cast assessment. Did we do a draft last year? I don't remember.
I think it's, I don't think we've done a draft in a while, but I was thinking we could do that. That'd be fun.
Okay. So that might happen.
Who knows?
It's all a mystery. But thank you, Sean, so much for joining us. Thank you all for listening.
Bye.
That was great. Bye.